All right, open your Bibles to Genesis chapter 31. And I guess I forgot what a long chapter 31 is, so we probably won't go beyond chapter 31 tonight. But we've come a long way in the book of Genesis, you know, from the creation of the world to the original sin. You know, when Adam and Eve's kids asked why they were no longer living in the garden, I guess Adam said, "Eve ate us out of house and home." So we went through that. We went through the promise of the Messiah. We've gone through the flood. We saw the eight people that came through the flood. Noah, his wife, and his three sons, Ham, Shem, and Japheth. Then we got introduced to Abraham, or Abram at the time, and Sarai. And remember, I told you, we'll go off on these little tangents briefly where we see certain genealogies, but the focus will always be on the genealogy of Jesus. And you can read those genealogies in the book of Matthew or in Luke, two separate genealogies, one for Jesus's earthly father, and one for his mom. But we'll see that focus begin to change. We also got to see what was either the first or second Christophanies in the Old Testament. And a Christophanies is quite simply just an appearance of Jesus in the Old Testament. And we saw that in Genesis chapter 14 when Abram met Melchizedek. Melchizedek was the king of Salem, and Melchizedek itself means the king of righteousness. So he was the king of righteousness, king of peace. Abram had a communion with him, and we read about him later on in Psalms, and the book of Hebrews goes into some detail on Melchizedek. And at the very least, he's a type of Jesus. I think he was most likely Jesus himself, because remember when Jesus was talking to the Pharisees, he said, "Abraham rejoiced to see my day," and he saw it. So we've gone through that. We've gone through the birth of Ishmael. Remember, there was a promise that a child was going to come through Abraham and Sarah, or Sarai at the time. And she got ahead of the whole thing and said, "I'm getting kind of old. Here's Hagar. Go ahead and have relations with her and have a child." And they did. And that has led to all sorts of problems to this very day, as we've seen this split between the Hebrew people and ultimately the Arab people. An Arab and Egyptian, and later on the Muslims, because Hagar was Egyptian, so Ishmael was half a Semite and half Egyptian. And he actually fathered many of the other tribes that became the Arab communities. So we've seen that. We saw the start of marriage. We saw the start of nations, so to speak, in Genesis chapter 10. We saw the tribal governments begin to rise. We did finally see the birth of the promised child, and that was Isaac. And Sarah had him at about the age of 90. Abraham was about 100 years old at the time and lived for another 75 years old or so. Sarah didn't live quite that long. She only lived to be 127, I think it was. Why is that funny? Yeah, only 127. She was young, but she died beautiful, apparently. We saw that God chose and used people that we would consider to be unrighteous, per se. When you look at Abraham, Abraham gave his wife away, in essence, twice. Once in Egypt and once in the land of Canaan with Abimelech and others. He would tell her, "Whenever we go anywhere, tell people that you're my sister because you're so beautiful they might kill me." We saw after the birth of Isaac, when Isaac gets Rebekah, he did the same thing. But speaking of Isaac, we see that Abraham sent out his servant, who we believe is a guy by the name of Eliezer, to find a wife for Isaac. And this is really important because you're going to find the Old Testament is the New Testament concealed, and the New Testament is the Old Testament revealed. So Eliezer, which means God's help, is almost identical to the Greek word for the Holy Spirit, God's helper, Parakletos. And the Holy Spirit does what? He goes out and gets the bride for Christ. Eliezer went out to get, on behalf of the father, to get the bride for the chosen one, which was Isaac, his son. And of course, they brought back Rebekah, which I think is just really cool, all the symbology back there. And of course, they end up having a couple of kids of their own, twins. And we know that while Rebekah was pregnant, she was trying to figure out what all the commotion was in her womb. And she heard from the Lord that there were two nations inside of her, and that the older would serve the younger. And of course, when the birth happened, Esau came out first. Jacob was holding on to Esau's heel, which is where he got his name. Esau came out as this really hairy guy, young kid, which is why they called him Esau, which basically means hairy. And and Jacob got his name because he grabbed onto Esau's heel. And Jacob means heel catcher. And so his nursemaids kind of named him that. It was not a term of endearment per se. It basically meant you're a conniver, you're trying to steal something. But we know that that was God's plan all along for Jacob to kind of take the lead. And we saw that Esau went out hunting one time, and he came back and he was hungry. And Jacob had been making red stuff, some kind of lentil soup or something. And Esau said, give me some because I'm dying, I'm famished, I'm hungry. And what did Jacob say to him? Jacob said, I'll give you some if you give me your birthright. And Esau said, well, what's my birthright if I'm starving to death? Yeah. And what you need to realize, what Esau did is he didn't lose an inheritance, because we'll see he gets an inheritance later on. What he was basically saying is, I don't care about being the one the Messiah comes through. Because later on we'll read that God loved Jacob, but he hated Esau. And the reason he hated Esau, you can go back and read it in Genesis, is because Esau gave no thought or caring toward that part. He certainly wanted the money, but he didn't care about having the Messiah come through. And of course, we know how that all turned out. And ultimately, Jacob also got the blessing from his father, though there was maybe a little bit of conniving going on there, because his mom got him sort of dressed up with fur on his arms and stuff to look and smell like Esau. But, you know, a lot of people accuse Jacob of wrongdoing in that particular point. I don't buy into that, because Rebekah was told by God that Jacob was going to be the choice. And so she made sure that it happened. And it wasn't Jacob's idea. It was his mother Rebekah's idea. And that led to some interesting adventures, because Esau basically said, once our father dies, he didn't tell Jacob this directly, but it was, I'm going to kill him. I'm going to kill my brother. And so Rebekah says that you need to take off, go back, and we're going to find a bride from my family, from Padan Aram, which is sort of in part of northern Iraq. And Jacob takes off. He meets some of his relatives, one being Rachel. He sees Rachel coming down to the well, and he immediately falls in love with her. And you guys know the story, right? He falls in love with her. And he meets her dad, which is his uncle Laban, and shortly after meeting her says, why don't you give me her as my wife? And Laban says, well, why should I give her to anybody else? But he says, you have to work 7 years for her. And Jacob loved Rachel so much, he did so. And then the wedding night came and the marriage was consummated, and Jacob woke up in the next morning and found out that he had been conned by the ultimate con man, and he married Leah instead. And Laban said, well, it's not our custom here to marry off the older before the younger. Now, that was something that should have come up in the discussion earlier, right? But he goes on to say, but if you'll work another 7 years, I will give you Rachel. And so he agreed. So he was conned, and he ended up spending 14 years working for his uncle Laban. And we'll find out that Laban didn't act very righteously with him. all along. And they start having children. And we see that Leah ends up with six. Where we left off in our story, Rachel has one, and then they have the handmaidens who have the rest. And so we're still a child short here, which will be Benjamin, and we'll see him in just a little bit. But one of the things that Jacob wanted to do was to leave, because he was told by God and his mom, you go to Padan Aram and then you come back home. Stay away from the Canaanites, come back home. And so he tells Laban that. Laban says, no, I don't want you to go. Stay a little while and work with me, because I can see that God has blessed you, and because of you, I've been blessed. And he really had. And so Jacob came up with this plan. He said, well, I tell you what, I don't want anything from you except I want all the speckled cattle, or the sheep, the lambs, etc., the goats, and some of them, other colored ones, and that way, if you ever go through my flocks and you find anything that isn't that, you can say I stole it from you, and other things would happen. And then we got into a very interesting part of the story, and that is that Jacob took different types of branches, and when the flock would come down, he would put them by the water. When the stronger ones in Laban's flock came and mated in front of those, they gave off the exact kind of sheep that Jacob wanted. And we haven't fully gotten to the bottom of that. We talked about some of the possibilities of how that happened or why that happened, but we won't go into that again tonight. But eventually, Jacob is ready to leave. We haven't really even read a verse yet. Have we caught you up on all this stuff now? So a lot of interesting things going on, and we're going to see that Jacob is getting ready to leave. And he's going to have some problems. So, chapter 31, verse 1, it says, now Jacob heard the words of Laban's son, saying, Jacob has taken away all that was our father's, and from what was our father's, he has acquired all this wealth. And that's really not a true statement. Jacob worked for all of this. And Jacob saw the countenance of Laban, and that simply means his face, and indeed it was not favorable toward him as before. Then the Lord said to Jacob, return to the land of your fathers and to your family, and I will be with you. And you notice the key there, return, I will be with you. What does that tell us about Jacob's journey that he needs to learn? That God told him to go back and he would be with him, which means what?
Protected.
Yeah, he's going to go back, he's going to be all right, but Jacob doesn't quite act that way on the trip back, does he? So Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah to the field to his flock and said to them, I see your father's countenance, that it is not favorable toward me as before, but the God of my father has been with me. And you know that with all my might I have served your father, yet your father has deceived me, albeit Rachel and Leah, and changed my wages 10 times, but God did not allow him to hurt me. If he said thus, the speckled shall be your wages, then all the flocks bore speckled. And if he said thus, the streaked shall be your wages, then all the flocks bore streaked. So either Jacob was behind all that, or God was simply behind all that to make sure he had something to go back with, which would come in handy when he encounters Esau. So God has taken away the livestock of your father and given them to me. And it happened at the time when the flocks conceived that I lifted my eyes and I saw in a dream, and behold, the lambs which leaped upon the flocks were streaked, speckled, and gray-spotted. And then the angel of God spoke to me in a dream, saying, Jacob, and he answers just like Samuel does, here I am. And he said, lift up your eyes now and see all the rams which leap on the flocks are streaked, speckled, and gray-spotted, for I have seen that all is that Laban is doing to you. In other words, God did intervene to stop the con man Laban from fully taking advantage of Jacob. So God was behind that. I am the God of Bethel. And why is that important? It's important because, first of all, Bethel means house of God. But what else happened at Bethel? That's where Abraham was. And that's where Isaac had spent time, in the house of God, formerly called Luz. Where you anointed the pillar, and where you made a vow to me. Now arise, get out of this land, and return to the land of your family. Don't you wish God would speak to us that clearly? And Rachel and Leah answered and said to him, is there still any portion or inheritance for us in our father's house? And this is actually a complaint. Are we not considered strangers by him? For he has sold us, sold each one of them to Jacob, and also completely consumed our money. And I would assume that Jacob actually came and paid a dowry for them as well, though it's not mentioned in the story. That's kind of the idea. And the dowry was supposed to go to the girls, ultimately, and it did not. For all these riches which God has taken from our father are really ours and our children's. Now then, whatever God has said to you, do it. And this is kind of an interesting twist, because sometimes we see in these earlier parts of Genesis, when the wife tells the husband to do something, he probably shouldn't have listened, except in a couple of cases. And that's true. But here we see that the wives are telling him to do something, and he does listen, and they are right, which I like to see. Then Jacob rose and set his sons and his wives on camels. Any of you ever been on a camel?
Yes.
I rode on a camel once when I was a kid. You don't want to go on a several hundred mile journey riding a camel. It's uncomfortable. They have been known to spit. They'll turn and spit right on you. And then laugh. They get a kick out of it, apparently. Anyway, so he rose, he set his sons and his wives on camels, and he carried away all his livestock and all his possessions which he had gained, his acquired livestock which he had gained in Paddan Aram, to go to his father Isaac in the land of Canaan, which is actually in part of modern-day Israel. Today, Bethel is east of the Jordan, west of the Jordan, and very, very close to where Jerusalem is today, and Jerusalem was at that time. Now, verse 19, now Laban had gone to shear his sheep, and Rachel had stolen the household idols that were her father's. And that the household idols, they're known as the teraphim, and they can represent an idol, which is kind of important in this story, because you will see Israel get into idol worship later. But the teraphim also, each one of them represented an ownership of property. And because they had lost all their property, their father Laban had taken it. Rachel responds by taking these things that are not just idols, but also proof of ownership. She's ticked off at her dad. You know, she had to wait an extra 7 years to marry the man that she loved, Jacob. Her father kind of messed with her as well. Anyway, and so she's stolen the household idols. And Jacob stole away, unknown to Laban the Syrian, and that he did not tell him that he intended to flee. So he fled with all that he had, and he rose and crossed the river and headed toward the mountains of Gilead. And Laban was told on the third day that Jacob had fled. So the son has been gone for 3 days. We see those kind of stories repeated in the Old Testament. Then he took his brethren with him and pursued him for 7 days' journey, and he overtook him in the mountains of Gilead. What do you think he plans on doing? He plans on doing ill to Jacob, probably killing him and taking all of his stuff back. But God had come to Laban the Syrian in a dream by night and said to him, be careful that you do not speak to Jacob neither good nor bad. And it really means from good to bad. You know, don't go in there with subterfuge and then change it to really get into his face and do evil to him. So Laban overtook Jacob. Now Jacob had pitched his tent in the mountains, and Laban with his brethren pitched in the mountains of Gilead. So they're fairly close. And Laban said to Jacob, what have you done that you have stolen away unknown to me and carried away my daughters like captives taken with a sword? And it literally means, why did you steal my gods? And I don't know about you, but do you really want a god that can be stolen? Isn't it interesting the things that people will worship? They'll go over to Sedona and have their harmonic convergence and hum for world peace. Or they'll have these little crystals that they'll have in their home or hang around their neck that has some mysterious power. Or they'll have these little idols that have a mouth that can't speak, ears that can't hear, eyes that can't see, arms that can't move and hold anything, feet that can't walk, and people will worship this kind of stuff. And I really think there's something innately ignorant for somebody to go out in the forest, cut down a piece of wood, and carve out their god. Mm-hmm. Doesn't make sense to me. And yet people do that and worship those things. Yeah. Isn't that odd? Anyway. Let's see. What have you've stolen away unknown to me and carried away my daughters like captives taken with the sword. Who do these daughters belong to now?
Jacob.
But here is conniving Laban still. Why did you flee away secretly and steal away from me and not tell me? Well, he'd been telling them for quite some time. For my, I might have sent you away with joy and songs, with timbrel and harp. Do you believe that?
Never
was going to happen. And you did not allow me to kiss my sons and my daughters. And by sons, he means the grandsons. Now you have done foolishly in so doing. It is in my power to do you harm, but the God of your father, it's not in his power, but the God of your father spoke to me last night saying, be careful that you speak to Jacob neither good nor bad. And now you've surely gone because you greatly long for your father's house, but why did you steal my gods? I would just laugh in his face over that comment. I mean, really, the irony of that. Why did you steal my gods? Do you know, our God cannot be stolen.
I love that.
He can't be taken away from you. He doesn't disappear. He travels wherever you happen to be, wherever you go on your journey. But apparently this guy, his gods can be stolen. And then Jacob answered and said to him, and he is talking quite honestly here, he says, because I was afraid, for I said, perhaps you would take your daughters from me by force. With whomever you find your gods, do not let him live. Uh-oh. Did you hear what he just said?
Mm-hmm.
He's basically inviting Laban to search for his gods. And wherever he finds them, in whoever's tent or possession, they're not going to live. Now, he obviously doesn't know that Rachel stole them. I like drama. In the presence of our brethren, identify what I have of yours and take it with you. For Jacob did not know that Rachel had stolen them. And we'll see this kind of repeated in a couple of other places in the Old Testament. And Laban went into Jacob's tent, into Leah's tent, and into the two maids' tents, but he did not find them. Then he went out of Leah's tent and entered Rachel's tent. And that's where they are. Now Rachel had taken the household idols and put them in a camel's saddle and sat on them. Now why do you think she did that?
To hide him,
but he can search anywhere. But there's something interesting that happens here that happens before the law even comes out a few centuries later, before they go to Egypt. So Laban searched all about the tent, but did not find them. And she said to her father, let it not displease my lord that I cannot rise before you, for the matter of women is with me. In other words, she's saying, I'm having my menstrual cycle. And we'll see when we get into the book of Exodus that whenever a woman had her menstrual cycle, she was considered unclean during that period. And anything she sat on was considered unclean. And so we already see this notion starting. So she's saying, unclean, unclean. Very clever girl. Whether she really was in her monthly season there or not. And he searched but did not find the household idols. So he couldn't touch her because he would be considered unclean during that period of time as well. And then Jacob was angry and rebuked Laban. And Jacob answered and said to Laban, what is my trespass? What is my sin that you have so hotly pursued me? You ever had problems with somebody that will just keep going after you and going after you, and you really haven't done anything wrong? And that is what has taken place here. And although you've searched all my things, what part of your household things have you found? Set it here before my brethren and your brethren, that they may judge between us both. These 20 years I've been with you. Imagine, he spent 20 years there. He was just supposed to go find his wife and go back. 20 years. Your ewes and your female goats have not miscarried their young, and I have not eaten the rams of your flock. That which was torn by beast, I did not bring to you. I bore the loss of it. And in that particular culture, if you had a shepherd and a lion or something came and killed one of the sheep, you had to grab that sheep and bring the carcass to the owner of it to prove that you did not steal it. And Jacob says, I didn't even do that. I replaced it with one of my own. So I acted very honestly. So you required it from my hand, whether stolen by day or stolen by night. There I was in the day the drought consumed me, and the frost by night, and my sleep departed from my eyes. Being a shepherd, as I'm finding out again, is a 24-hour-a-day job. You had to be out with the sheep. And remember when Jesus said, I am the door? One of the things he was talking about, we'll see later on, when the shepherds were out in the field, at nighttime they would bring them into a sheepfold, which was basically four big walls without a roof, and it had a door. And the shepherd would sleep right at the door while the sheep were inside to rise up to protect them from any wolves or anything else. So you had to go through Jesus to get to the sheep. Now, of course, the door has other meanings as well to it, but he was that great shepherd. Anyway, verse 41, thus I've been in your house 20 years. I served you 14 years for your two daughters and 6 years for your flock, and you have changed my wages 10 times. Unless the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had been with me, surely now you would have sent me away empty-handed. And God has seen my affliction and the labor of my hands and rebuked you last night. In other words, God spoke to you and he's rebuking you because he knows what a con man you are. And Laban answered and said to Jacob, these daughters are my daughters, and these children are my children, and this flock is my flock. All that you see is mine. True? Not true. See, he didn't plan on ever letting Jacob go. Anything Jacob accomplished belonged to him. But what can I do this day to these my daughters or to their children whom they have borne? Now therefore, come, let us make a covenant, you and I, and let it be a witness between you and me. So Jacob took a stone and set it up as a pillar, and then Jacob said to his brethren, gather stones, and they took stones and made a heap, and they ate there on the heap. And Laban called it Jegar Sahadutha, but Jacob called it Galeed, which basically means heap, which I wish they would have just called it heap and left it at that instead of these words. And Laban said, this heap is a witness between you and me this day, therefore its name shall be called Galeed. So he went with Jacob's name. Also Mitzpah, because he said, may the Lord watch between you and me when we are absent from one another. If you afflict my daughters, or if you take other wives besides my daughters, although no man is with us, see, God is witness between you and me. Okay. Then Laban said to Jacob, here is this heap, and here is this pillar which I have placed between you and me. This heap is a witness, and this pillar is a witness. And this is very common back in those days. They would do things like this to form a covenant. And it was also sort of a threat to you. And you will not pass beyond this heap and this pillar to me for harm. And it's interesting where it is placed today is way up on the northern edges of Israel, even to this day. So we've still kind of got this little battle going on between the two to this very day. The God of Abraham, the God of Nahor, and that's Abraham's brother, and the God of their father, judge between us. And Jacob swore by the fear of his father, Isaac. And then Jacob offered a sacrifice on the mountain and called his brethren to eat bread, and they ate bread and stayed all night on the mountain. And early in the morning, Laban arose and kissed his sons and daughters and blessed them. And then Laban departed and returned to his place.